Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. All righty, 6 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you? We're here. It's Tuesday. We've got 4 more shows, including this one. My buddy Mark Riley is here.
Yo.
We're going to have a morning. We're going to have a show. We got Eric Bogosian coming in a little later. We're going to talk to Robert Reich on the phone. Man, I can't take any more cookies, people. I love you, but I can't take any more cookies. I'm going to have to go home and go back on Weight Watchers if this cookie thing keeps up. Not that I don't appreciate it. We got some weird cookies today with actual like photographs on them of a little cartoon with the Wake Up Sheeple, Morning Sedition. They're an illustration printed on a cookie. Wow, technology. Listen to me. I sound like an old guy.
Wait a minute.
It was amazing.
Didn't somebody send us something with a Christmas ornament with our faces on it?
Yesterday, someone made a Christmas ornament. A couple of regular listeners who actually come to our remotes, Chris, and I can't remember her name, but today we got these cookies with pictures on them. They can do anything with the thing now with the cookies.
Riley, how are you doing this show with a straight face, man? Look at Maren's head.
Yeah,
what's going on with my head?
I wasn't going to say anything.
You got
a big alfalfa cow lick sticking straight up.
I got hat head. I was planning on wearing the hat, but it's so hot in here. I don't know what Isaac is. Isaac must be a reptile. It's like the iguana box at the Bronx Zoo in here. It's ridiculous. I don't know how the hell I'm going to get through this show if this temperature keeps up.
We're going to get through the show looking at your head.
I'll change my head. But I do want to thank Kim for the cookies with the pictures on them. They put the picture right on the cookie. I don't know if I'm supposed to eat it or look at it. It was fascinating. Also, beautiful, beautiful. A single red rose was sent to us, sent to me from Dear Mark, I am an OB who delivers babies in Boston, Massachusetts. Thanks for keeping me pumped and able to stay up all night knowing you were there in the dawn. You will be missed, your Boston fan. Beautiful single red rose sitting right here on the desk. Here's one for both of us, Riley. This guy just is pissed off that the show is leaving, but I love these a few paragraphs. I hope he doesn't mind that I'm reading it. He goes on for a little while and he says, hell, why am I going on and on when it's just an intern that's going to skim through this thing? Yeah. It must be some desperate psychological attempt at reaching out to a friend that's moving away. Yeah, Maron, you've ushered in my days for months now, and I got to admit it's sad to see you go. You will be sorely missed. Mark Riley, I won't say I won't give you a listen as I finish out my final days at the methadone clinic.
Oh, God.
Yeah, a long tragic story, but the reason Morning Sedition became a daily ritual is the 5 a.m. visits to the clinic as I started the detox, and the earlier I could get there, the better. As Morning Sedition goes off the air, so ends my methadone treatment. Ah, hallmarks. You know, it's sad, but I feel bad that the show's not going to be there to at least make this guy laugh, because when you get out of the methadone treatment, you need a little something, you know?
Yeah.
But he also went on to write, I'll never understand why a comedian like, I don't know, the King of Queens guy gets a successful sitcom when guys like you keep struggling. I mean, I'm sure you're doing okay, but you know what I mean. I mean, come on. Is Drew Carey really that funny? No, he's not. I love this guy. Thanks a lot, Aaron. I appreciate it. That was very nice. It just shows you the diversity of people that enjoy Air America. We got an OBGYN who sends me a rose and a guy who's ending his methadone treatment. That's just great. And then, of course, there's this email. Mark, it's not an email, snail mail, typed. And it had a very nice lettering. There's a lot of hate in this one, so I buckle in. Mark Maron, horrified at your anti-Semitic rant yesterday morning. If all that Judaism means to you are latkes and dreidels and you have a lot to learn, I suggest that you shut your, quote, Jew mouth, unquote, until you do. And if you have issues with your mother, talk to your psychiatrist. I wasn't surprised that the Southern minister approved of you. You furthered his plans for destroying us one way or another. Happy to know that you've been fired and that you are leaving. Sorry to know that you will carry the disease with you. Oh, how awful is that?
Wow.
Carry the disease? How much? What a beautiful masterpiece of Semitic hatred. This is a person that is wishing that I die for limiting Judaism to dreidels and latkes, because I was talking about Hanukkah and that my connection with Judaism was not as deep as perhaps this person who would like to kill a Jew who disagrees with her sense of what Judaism is, as opposed to let me ride free in the world with my disease. Look at that. Horrible. Mm. What's a couple other things there, Riley? Before we get into the sadness of Tukey Williams, no matter what you think about the death penalty, the early mourning has been sort of karmically cursed by the state sanctioned murder of Tukey Williams by lethal injection at 12:35 Pacific time this morning. It's heavy, man. It's heavy. And you know, Kayla pointed out to me that Fox News was actually the only cable news outlet to carry it live at 3 a.m.
What do you mean? Oh, in other words, carry the gathering outside.
Yeah.
You know, it dawned on me this morning, Mark, as I woke up, that in the time it would take me to get up, shower, do what I normally do, and get ready to come in here, he would have been murdered.
Yeah.
He would have been executed.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about it that way, it is, for me, truly a frightening thing. I've always been a proponent of the idea that you can't really be halfway for or against the death penalty. Either you're for it or you're against it. I am unalterably, opposed to the death penalty.
Well, you pulled me around to it, you know, because I had thought about it, but I'm one of these people that I'm not so quick to make commitments to opinions on something as extreme as that, and I should be. You know, this is one of those weird liberal conundrums I had, because there's part, I think, of all people that feeds on vengeance, that wants to see that type of reprisal taken for somebody that committed crimes like that. There's plenty of people that just, they thrive on it. They believe that it's justified. It makes them feel good when people get killed for killing other people, and it's satisfying to them. But as a civilized person, and as somebody who believes in rehabilitation and believes that it is state-sanctioned murder, thanks to your talking to me about it, you know, I've sort of come around on that I don't want to honor that part of myself that feeds on vengeful feelings.
Well, if Tukey Williams' execution accomplished anything at all, there were some of his contemporaries that were not active in the anti-gang movement. Okay. In other words, former Crips who were just former Crips have come together now and said, we are going to try and keep Tukey's work alive in trying to keep young kids out of these gangs. That's the only good thing. And see, the sad part is, had they let him live, he could have continued that work. That's the thing that people don't seem to be focusing on here. That his work was saving lives, and if you had allowed him, then nobody, as Senator Barbara Boxer was here yesterday, said, nobody's talking about letting him out of jail.
Right.
The bottom line is, had you let him live, he could have continued his work and perhaps influenced countless other lives.
Right. But then, you know, there's people who argue that say, well, this guy, because he invented the Crips, is responsible for thousands of deaths by virtue of that.
That's where you have to find a balance. And maybe had Tukey Williams lived, he could have found that balance. Maybe it wasn't balanced now. I'd take that argument. Maybe the number of people who have been injured and killed by the Crips was not in balance with the number of lives that Tukey Williams changed. But had they let him live, maybe it would have been.
Right. And also, do you hold somebody responsible on that level for an ideology that becomes its own thing, that becomes a manifestation, that you start a gang? All right, let's say there's 10 of you, there's 20 of you, and all of a sudden it becomes 1,000 after you're, you know, long detached from it. Are you still responsible for that in terms of what that gang reaps? I mean, it would seem to me that there are ideologies and practices in this world that were established, you know, that didn't come to until after the guy was dead. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It is something like Marxism or communism from Marxism. I mean, there are ideas out there in the world that become viral despite the fact that when the person who created them, they didn't, you know, they weren't that bad initially. Obviously, the Crips are always a very bad idea, but I'm just saying that type of argument, that saying that this guy is personally responsible for thousands of deaths, that's a hard thing to hang on him, don't you think?
Well, it may be a hard thing to hang on him unless you're one of the families of one of the victims.
Well,
because there were a lot of folks that wanted to see him executed because they had lost loved ones to gang violence.
Yeah.
But see, the other part is you have to put gangs in context in this country.
Okay.
There have been gangs in America since there was an America.
Yeah.
There have always been, you know, not far from here in New York, the Five Points.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the mid-19th century.
I know, I saw that movie.
Yeah, you've got all these different gangs that were going on, and you know, the whole mob thing in the early 20th century, they were all about gangs. So, you know, you go forward to the 50s, you had the Ford and Baldies. You go forward, you know, further than mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. you have these different guys. And then you have the Crips and the Bloods, and you've got the MS-13s. You know, and there is a common thread that runs through these gangs that America has obviously been unable to deal with over the long term.
Poverty?
Poverty is one aspect of it, but the need for family among people whose families are broken.
Yeah.
You know, true. Gangs provide family. Gangs provide structure.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, people join them because they have no structure and no family in their lives.
It's like the mafia.
In many instances, yeah.
Or the church.
See, there you go.
All right, so here we go. When we come back, we got some stuff we want to go over. The year in review in terms of this administration, the neocon death cult. We'll look a little bit back on that. I want to talk a little bit about Bush's speech yesterday about Iraq and the numbers of war
debt.
Well, we don't have to. But
no, I'm only kidding.
Well, there was a guy who wrote me an email, the guy who was pissed off that I wasn't hard on Russ Feingold from being more of a firebrand.
Oh, he sent you another email?
No, but he brought up a number. You know, when you're talking about numbers of Iraqi dead, there's several ways to look at it. And you know, Bush mentioned it last night. His number had to be low because he is a liar. But, you know, let's go over that a little bit. And I also want to talk about his reaction to what he says is torture in Iraq, because I believe it's sanctioned by his administration. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. There is a persistent text messenger who I know is from Nebraska. Fanatical Christian text messenger who texts constantly. He's sort of half trying to save my soul, half trying to send
you to hell.
Yeah, send me to hell. He invited me to dinner with his wife in Nebraska, but he's constantly writing these cryptic text messages to the show. And this one is about Tukey Williams, and he's basically saying that Tukey Williams didn't sell any books, and there wasn't a guard that didn't want him dead. And this is a guy that never stops text messaging about how can you be for reproductive freedom. And these, I don't know how Christians reconcile the fact that they're right to life, so to say, yet they are, you know, just vehemently pro-death penalty. I don't know where you can reconcile that as a true Christian. I don't understand it. If you've got an answer, my text messaging friend, why don't you send it on? Because clearly you have sleeping problems. Maybe it's your conscience. Last night, Bush admitted that he is going, that the going is going to be rough in Iraq. This is weird for him. He doesn't usually mention that kind of stuff. It's his new angle that, look, I'm going to admit that there's some problems. Isn't that his new take, Riley?
That is exactly, it's not even really his new take.
Right.
This is the new take of the people around him to get him out of what has probably been the worst year an American president has seen since the days of Warren G. Harding.
And this is also the same, he also is using the same line that Rumsfeld did early on. Now, he's basically saying that Iraq, that it's par for the course what's going on there, and a transition to a free society, which kind of is a riff on Rumsfeldian. This is what democracy looks like in the beginning. Whatever free means to this rationalizing frontman for the neocon death cult, I mean, freedom relative to an occupation that is nourishing a multi-faced civil war, perhaps. He also said that 30,000 Iraqi troops have been killed since the war in Iraq began. If he said this, bottom line, you know, it's got to be much higher. You get the body count, it comes from a U.S.-British non-governmental group that says the count is somewhere between 27,383 and 30,892 civilians. Now, my question, Riley, who's determined to be a civilian in this conflict? I mean, that's got to be up for a whole new series, another series of speculation. I mean, who's an enemy combatant, an insurgent, a terrorist? What determines that, and how can you prove it? You know,
well, see, one of the things I must say, in fairness to Iraq body count, not in fairness to Bush, I think just Bush just pulled that number because it makes him look more in touch with the war.
Yeah.
But Iraq body count scrupulously documents each death that they have listed there. They actually have a chart, God help us, that explains exactly, you know, who the person was, if they are identifiable, and under what circumstances they died. Now, they cannot, in theory, parse out whether a civilian may have had terrorist leanings or whatever. But the thing that Iraq body count does not do a great job at doing, and this is not to knock them, but the thing they don't do a great job of doing is counting the number of Iraqi civilians who have died outside of the major population centers in the country.
Well, that's where you get these other numbers. So let's say let's say Bush is completely full of it. Let's say the numbers are wrong, because I've heard other numbers. And, you know, one of the numbers that I've heard was put out by the medical journal Lancet back in 2004 in September.
Yeah.
It was based on a broad survey of Iraqi households in a lot of different neighborhoods and the deaths within those circles of people. And they come up with this speculation of 100,000 dead Iraqis because of this war from airstrikes and a bunch of other reasons. But this is back in September 2005. Now, that seems to be a high number, and it's based on a speculation, a scientific speculation nonetheless. So I say we do what I do. I do Bush math, and that, you know, we take double what Bush said to be true, make it 60,000 and put that against 100,000, and I'd say it's probably somewhere in the area of 80,000. But that is my math. I don't want to be glib because I know these are human lives, but you know it's got to be over 30,000.
Well, see, here's what Bush is doing, and it's a very interesting tack, again, coming as it does at the end of the year. He is now trying to say, if you look at the information that was contained in that report that we talked about yesterday, about how seemingly out of touch he is on certain things, a lack of curiosity about certain things, what I think is beginning to happen now is that as people are saying, look, this is how you can redeem your presidency at this point. Again, after suffering an extraordinarily bad year on virtually every front you can imagine.
Yeah.
So now he's a little bit more forthcoming with mistakes that have been made. Now he's a little bit less optimistic about how long it's going to take to fix things in Iraq. And in the meantime, by the way, single parents are being sent over there. I just saw a story this morning, Mark. It was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
A single mother, a business owner, is being sent over to Iraq as part of that IRR, the Ready Reserve thing, leaving behind a 13-year-old kid that she doesn't have any idea how the kid's going to be cared for.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Yeah. You know, it's interesting that this new angle is garnering him a couple of points a bump in the polls, because now all of a sudden, after, what, 5-6 years here, this guy is finally, you know, acting like a human who's taking, acting is the key word here, who's taking some responsibility in how he's presenting this to the American people. And it's still not taking responsibility. I think it's still a phony pitch.
Well, it's not taking responsibility. It is doing the politically expedient thing. That's what he's doing. And all of this talk about, you know, Iraq can get better, and, you know, we're making blows and striking blows for freedom and democracy. This is all around the election.
I get it. Another bit of Bush BS is his criticizing the torture of Sunni detainees at the hands of Shia police militia. Given that he's trying to legally justify the ongoing policy of torture that his administration designed with complete disregard for international law, this is very disingenuous. Very disingenuous. And I think they're sanctioning it. I think it's a way that they can let the Shia militias within the police forces handle things while the Iraqi security forces are not together. I think that these are death squads, and I think that the Americans are turning a blind eye to it. 27 past. We'll do the iNews when we come back.
Listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. And now, another great moment in Morning's Edition history.
And now, the Morning Sedition old-time radio players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
This week, Morning Sedition Radio Theater presents Karaoke with Mark Riley's stirring rendition of MacArthur Park.
Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it because it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again.
Oh, no. And Wayne Gilman singing James Brown.
Get up off of that thing and try to release that pressure. Wait a minute, so funky. I need it. Sunshine good. Good God.
This has been Karaoke with Mark Riley and Wayne Gilman on Morning's Edition Radio Theater.
This has been another great moment in Morning's Edition history.
Nice, nice. 35 past the hour, Air America Radio here at Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Morning's Edition. And our it's like, what, we got like four more shows, including this one? My brain is starting to wash it out. Like, literally, I'm coming up blank. I'm going, Morning, Oh, yeah, sedition. I screwed up Philosopher Kings and Queens. Unbelievable. My brain is literally the denial of is shredding, and the reality is coming through. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. From the New York Sun, Bush to stress Iraqi need for democracy. Bush to stress Iraqi need for democracy. Translation, Diebold gets no bid contract in Iraq. From Montpelier Times, integrity most looked up word on online dictionary. Integrity most looked up word on online dictionary. Translation, GOP leaders keep looking up funny foreign words. yeah, how about this one? Politicians cramming for 2006 election. Nothing. Nah. All right, yeah, there's a little something. I see I jumped on the nothing. Chris, you okay, man?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, someone wrote in. Let me finish this. I'll talk to you in a minute. Yeah, from All Headline News. Lesbian motorcyclist trademark dykes on bikes. So the story we covered yesterday. Lesbian motorcyclist trademark dykes on bikes. Translation. Dutch bicycle maker settles for bikes on dikes. Doesn't make sense, but it's funny.
You know, that one about the Diebold, I mean, that's going to happen.
Of course.
They already have contracts with the government. They're going to have to bring them over there just out of obligation to fulfill those contracts.
Absolutely, it's going to happen. They're going to have some sort of electronic voting. I don't know how they did it in Afghanistan, but I know that Diebold still exists. It's still a functioning company, and God knows that this administration is going to sell it over there as best they can.
They'll make the Diebold purple finger paint special.
Yeah, that's how they did it. That's how they did it in Afghanistan. That's how they marked people to know that they voted, right?
Well, that was Iraq.
Didn't do it in Afghanistan as well?
I don't believe so.
All right, so I got my information wrong? What are you going to do, fire me?
So what did you want to say to Chris?
I just want to say that I might have made a mistake about the echinacea thing, my friend.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I got yelled at by somebody on our email who said, you're drinking the Kool-Aid, man, on the echinacea. You must have got the Fox News talking points on that. It really does work, apparently, if you believe.
Okay.
Well, I believe.
there you go.
That's all that matters. Right?
Now, he said that the experiments they ran to prove that it didn't work used so little of it that it couldn't have made a difference. But whatever. I brought some echinacea tea in yesterday.
Yeah. How much of that crap do you need to use?
You need a lot.
It makes me ill if you take more than one capsule.
Well, that's the way it works. You feel ill from the echinacea, and you forget that you have a cold, and there hopefully the cold's like, I guess he doesn't need us anymore, and they leave. All right. Look, speaking about health, Riley just pulled up this beautiful science fiction-like story. What does it say?
Except it's real.
It's real. Human embryonic stem cells have been injected into the brains of fetal mice inside the womb, and some of them took, man.
Yeah.
Some of them took. The human cells had no apparent impact on the animal's behavior. About 100,000 cells were injected into each animal, and just a fraction survived in their new hosts. That means the animal's brains were still more than 99% mouse. Well, thank God.
Yeah, but watch out for that 1% human.
What is going to be that poor 1%? It's probably self-awareness. The mouse is going to become like a month old and going, I'm a mouse!
Yeah.
What the hell is this?
Yeah. Wait till they start using the vending machines here.
They already are, dude. I don't know if you've looked in the kitchen. I use the word dude a lot. On my new show, that's going to go. No more dude. I decided it's a new me. I'm going to get rid of the word dude for a while. I don't know where it came from. I think it's a habit I picked up in Los Angeles. Again, I would like to thank Don. I want to thank my OBGYN fan who delivers babies in Boston for the single white rose, or the red rose. I appreciate that. It's very nice. What else I was talking about? All that Japanese candy we got yesterday.
You ate it all, didn't you?
No, but it's beautiful packaging. They really? The Japanese do a wonderful job with the presentation. Can I just say that? And that goes all around, from sushi to glassware to plates. Yeah, it is. Sushi's a beautiful present. It's a nice little thing. It's packaged. It's pretty, and you got the thing on the thing.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about the Japanese candy, it looks like normal candy when you eat it. Like there's caramels, but there's a hint of something in all the candy. Like you're eating a caramel, you're like, this is caramel. And you're like, wait, what's that?
That's
fish.
That's the first problem.
Fish is not good with caramel. Why is there fish in it? Or like it's just weird. There's bean paste. No, that's Chinese. But what was the one we had yesterday? Green tea. Which isn't so bad. But
there was a soy taste to that.
Well, there's soy in everything, I think, now. It's a law. All right, look, let's move on to this table we have here, this counting down of Bush hallmarks over the last year. It's pretty mind-blowing. This is from the Center for American Progress. They issued this basically it's the year in review, and you look at 2005 and it's pretty astounding. It's pretty astounding. Just right off the bat, beginning January 7th, documents reveal Armstrong Williams received $240,000 to hawk No Child Left Behind. Bang, a few days later, January 12th, search for Iraq's weapons of mass destruction comes to a quiet end. That's you know, when I'm looking back on this, I know we reported on all this stuff, Riley. But I didn't remember it was that early on.
Yeah.
January 12th, they just said they ain't here and left.
Mm-hmm.
January 20th, that was the nightmare of the inauguration. January 26th was the single deadliest day for U.S. forces in Iraq.
Mm.
Yep, February 4th, Alberto Gonzalez confirmed received stronger than expected protest vote for role in torture memos, but still put in. February 9th, Medicare prescription drug bill revealed to cost $600 billion more than promised. February 10th, Jeff Gannon retires as White House reporter after being exposed as being a gay prostitute, male
mm-hmm.
prostitute. No, there's nothing wrong with being gay, and I guess there's nothing wrong with being a prostitute either in some circles, but when you're posing as a reporter that gets access to the White House, then there's an issue. February 14th, Bush asked for $82 billion supplemental for Iraq, pushing cost of Iraq war over $200 billion. And that was in February. Man,
mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine what it must be at now. I think the price of it is, what, we checked that out for me. It's like, what is it, like $190 million a day? Isn't something crazy?
It's something along those lines. And
crazy?
It, you know, it is always, the Bush administration has been very clever at separating that Iraq expenditure out from the budget so it doesn't look like he's breaking the bank.
$195 million a day, I got confirmation. We're going to talk to Robert Reich about where that money comes from and where the hell that's going. Robert Reich wrote an interesting piece in Newsweek magazine that really breaks down how, you know, he was able to create sort of a language in terms of defining who's operating in the global and the U.S. economy. I'm excited to talk to him about that. He'll be on in a little while. Here's a big day. March 21st, Bush interrupts vacation to fly back to Washington and sign Schiavo bill in the middle of the night. Boy, that was important, wasn't it? Huh? His brother calls up, come on! We got to keep this woman alive. And that was, you know what's interesting is I'm reading over this thing. You know who we haven't heard from in months? Bill Frist. Seems like weeks.
Well, he's on the DL.
Well, he's under investigation. Tom DeLay, indicted. The number of people that are going down around this guy is just, you know, unbelievable. Here's what was a sad day in history. April 20th, 2005, Bush signs bankruptcy bill. This is the bill that makes it harder for average Americans to recover from financial misfortune by declaring bankruptcy, allowing no exceptions even for victims of identity theft, those suffering from debilitating illness, or U.S. service members. This country is going to pay for this. You know, when we get a Democrat in 2008, we're going to have to start chipping back away at this legislation that these guys put into place for at the behest of the credit card companies. And Joe Biden, I think, is responsible for this. As much as I want to like Joe Biden, as much as I think he's a fairly forthright guy, he is sort of poured out to the credit card companies and helped push this thing through.
Well, I don't know how many of them are in his home state, and obviously he is beholden to them because they create a fairly large number of jobs in this state. But, you know, you look at this litany of nonsense with Bush, and you think to yourself, Mark, suppose Bush had responded to Katrina as quickly as he responded to Terri Schiavo.
Yeah, or if he even had it in place, if he even had the infrastructure in place. This guy is paying such lip service over the last year or so to getting all this infrastructure in place, putting Negroponte in as a Homeland Security chief, which is crazy. That guy, I think he's responsible for the new death squads in Iraq when he was there as the prime minister. I think he put those in place. And then having that idiot, Brown, in mm-hmm. there at FEMA, who knew nothing, it's very disappointing, but I'll tell you one thing, in looking over this stuff over the last year, I do feel like, you know, when I look at each one of these points that are in this rundown, we reported, you know, thoroughly on every one of them and provided our opinions, and I think we helped the momentum to really put Bush in the corner that he's in now.
Oh, yeah, and he is, make no mistake about it, in a corner, in a box. No matter how he tries to spin the economy, no matter how he tries to spin the war in Iraq, no matter how much he tries to ignore the growing circle of indicted former friends, the fact of the matter is, remember, next month, Ken Lay is supposed to be, his trial is supposed to start. You remember him? Remember Ken Lay, Mr. Enron? He's due January 17th.
To go to court?
Yes.
Oh, that'll be
his trial's supposed to start.
I'm going to miss that, but I hope maybe by the end of the week Roe will be indicted. This is a going-away gift for me. Wouldn't that be nice? When we come back in just a few minutes, we are going to play you a rarely heard Rapture Watch. Is it the one I'm thinking?
Uh-oh.
Is it? Yeah, I'm very excited. 45 Pass, a classic on the way.
Otasa cantata matita. Hear my voice, idolaters, fucklers at the teats of beasts, and every guy named Ron in Hoboken. This is MILF Cardinal Milfington of Rapture Watch. And because I always want to know the latest on what Satan and his toad-licking minions are up to, I listen to the Morning Sedition Monday through Friday, every hubdominal, look it up, from 6 to 9 a.m. here on Air America Radio.
Fifty past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. One of four left. We are going to go back in time a little over a year ago. Cardinal Milfington, and by the way, Mort Milfington, who does the War on Brain segment, will be doing the last one today. But this is his cousin, Cardinal Milfington, from about a year ago, and I rarely heard. But extremely funny. This is like a bootleg almost, and maybe it was heard once in the 6 o'clock hour way back when of Cardinal Milfington. It's a Rapture Watch.
And now another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Listen closely, ye nattering nabobs of Satan. Heed my exhortations, thou boggle mystic Apollonians. Take some notes, for Christ's sake, ye Albigensian schismatistical Hebleophorites. For the end times are things I gotta do today. Buy clothespins, get extra large cat box liners, and call the doctor about that thing on my neck. Okay, guys, that's the second time somebody put their refrigerator notes in with my script. I don't care who did it, I just want it to stop, all right? Anywho, last abdominal, I told you about something important, but it slipped my mind. The weakest before that, I'm pretty sure I discussed something just as important that I can't recall either. And the weakest before that, I'm almost certain I told you that huffing airplane glue in your mid to late 40s is probably bad for your short-term memory. What's that? I didn't break it, Daddy. It was like that when I came home. And long-term memory. But now it's time to pack up your non-Christian crap and hop the last train to the ninth level of Hellville, you Masonic perverts, because you're about to spend an eternity stuck in Lodi again. For according to my paper of choice, the New York Post, swarms of locusts, not seen since the days of Von Meter, are now devouring Israel, Egypt, and Palestine. And even worse, the invasion is causing these countries to unite against insects instead of concentrating on what they should be doing, killing each other. For it was prophesied in Revelation 25:25, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, whoa, whoa, whoa. Quote, and the three horns which thou sawest are three kings, which receive power as kings with the beast. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast as a trilateral coalition against damage to gardens and hotel property. End quote. Man, that's good glue. End quote. Man, that's good glue. Did I just say that? Could it be any clearer, you satanic knights of Mithridates? Even the countries we depend on to hate each other are now joining together. But in the mark of the beast, it won't be long before all warring nations in the Mideast join together in peace. And that's God's cue to come kill us all. And that's a good thing, I think. I mean, wait, let me refresh my memory. Yeah, good glue. So watch out, Hedonites. Soon the locusts will be upon you. And then they'll want all your glue supplies. In the meantime, keep on fornicating, fornicators. And we'll keep the light on for you. In hell.
Has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Oh, look at that. The glue-huffing Milfington.
Yeah, right. Now, Al Sharpton didn't find that funny?
I don't know. I remember hearing that. I don't remember. I guess maybe we could have heard it. I know it only played once, but there you go. Enjoy that. I hope you're savoring that because there's a, I swear to God, at some point somebody's going to go through these archives, McDonald. Someone is going to do it, P.W. McDonald, and say, wow, we got to put this out on a box set. You know, I thought one of the primary concerns of Air America was making money. Well, this is the time to do it. Someone, they ought to hire someone just to put that damn thing together. Maybe me. Maybe I'll do it. But you know what I'm saying? Don't you think it would be great? I remember I got the National Lampoon's Lemmings box set, which was mind-blowing because there was no way I would have ever heard that. The Lemmings, the National Lampoon Radio Hour. Yeah. I don't even know where that was on. Do you?
I had it on vinyl many, many years ago.
Right. So it must have run for one or two seasons at most on I don't even know what network. I should know, but I don't. But somebody sent me the box. There's like five CDs in it, and it's got all this great work with Belushi, Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, Belzer's on there, Gilda Radner. I mean, just mind-blowing. I mean, I'm not comparing the show to that, but I'm saying that these kind of things become available eventually. I just hope it does. Speaking of comedy, I read your buddy Stanley Crouch's piece in the New York Daily News.
Yeah.
About Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know, man.
I love Stanley, but he's nuts on this one.
Let me try and understand what he's saying. He's basically saying that Richard Pryor's genius was undeniable when he was at his best, but for the most part, because of his vulgarity and his way of personifying black people in his bits, that he worked against the cause. That he was saying that characterizing or bringing to life all these vulgar characters of the lower class street life that Pryor came from sort of created a snowball rolling towards what he sees as vulgarity in hip-hop and a baseness of the culture that is disrespectful to the black community.
Yeah, Stanley has long had a problem, for those of you who are not familiar with his work, he's had a problem with what he considers the coarsening of American culture, specifically the coarsening of American culture in the black community. And it is his thesis in this piece that Richard Pryor was a major contributor to that coarsening. Now, you know, you can shoot that particular theory full of holes, and we can do that as we go forward this morning, but that is Stanley's basic premise. Now, he is not denying that Richard Pryor is a genius. He is not denying that Richard Pryor created an extraordinary body of work. It's just that Stanley continues to try and find some explanation for Snoop Dogg and 50 Cent and people like that. So now Richard Pryor is somehow responsible for the vulgarity that he hears from them.
That's interesting because that's the type of, I don't think you can hang that on that guy.
You can't hang it on the guy, but that's what Stanley's trying to do.
But it's politicizing. It's almost bordering on revisionism in a way, I think, because as we talked about on the phone, I think we should get into a little bit about what was really the concern of the black community when Richard Pryor started telling its secrets, is that there was a discomfort, a cultural discomfort. And for me, when I was 15, I saw the first Richard Pryor movie, I wasn't even engaging in the dialogue of race. I was just seeing a guy being more honest than I'd ever seen a guy be, and also hilariously funny about a world that I had never even seen.
Well, one man's honesty is another man's vulgarity. We'll get back to it.
Okay, great. 57 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Six past the hour. Good morning, geniuses, philosophy kings and queens. Why do I keep doing that? It's amazing. I'm messing it up. It's like I'm detaching, folks. Philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to you, lurking conservatives. One, my buddy, the text messenger, who invited me to dinner out there. My Christian friend out in Nebraska, who's slowly trying to reach my heart. And now he took offense because he thinks I did. Look, buddy, I know it was just an innocent invitation, and we would just sit down and talk. How are you, Mike? Mark Riley?
I'm
losing it. How are you, Mike? Nice to see you. Who the hell are you in there?
I'm doing all right, Ken. How are you?
I'm pretty good, Mike. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know if Al Franken called?
I know.
Hey, you guys are both black. He called Wayne Gilman. Mark.
He said, how you doing, Mark?
How you doing, Mark?
Close enough.
Yeah, close enough. That was pretty good.
All right, so look, we'll do the liberal confessional in just a second. We'll finish up our conversation about Stanley Crouch's take on Richard Pryor. But right now, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's morning's edition, Cliff Notes. A huge, oh, I'm not going to do this. A huge oily smoke cloud from a fire raging at a fuel depot north of London was spreading over France and heading for Spain. British authorities said this is the largest oil fire Britain or Europe has had to face since firemen tried to put out Dodi Fayed's hair in a Paris tunnel. All right. In Iowa... Oh, man. An Iowa girl had to be hospitalized when she suffered a seizure after five continuous hours of playing a video game. The girl was playing a game called True Crime New York City. Ironically, video game players in New York City who play the game True Crime Iowa report nodding off almost immediately. The girl's eyes were dilated and she was foaming at the mouth. Two facts which will be mentioned prominently in the advertising for True Crime Streets of New York 2. Oh, come on. All right. Paris Hilton has been named worst celebrity dog owner in an online poll. Leslie Padgett, editor of the magazine, said, quote, "First she loses Tinkerbell, then she ditches her for a cuter dog, then replaces that dog with a ferret, then a kinkajou monkey, and then I gather a goat," adding, "and I thought she had that video removed from the internet." Josh Stone, who has a dog named Dusty Springfield, was named at number one celebrity dog owner. She's also the only celebrity in America whose dog's name is better known than her own.
Oh, my God.
How do you like that? All right, let's continue talking about Stanley Crouch, who feels that Richard Pryor, though a genius and though gifted and though at his best was everything he should be, was overshadowed by his vulgarity and his insistence on characterizing lower class black characters as being prominent in terms of. I think Stanley seems to think that Richard was saying this is what real black life is.
Well, yeah, and Stanley not being. Not enjoying that level of black life, not wanting to be a part of that level of black life, has, I think, gone after Richard Pryor for exposing it too much. I mean, there's a quote in here that is kind of revealing to me anyway.
This is from the Daily News yesterday.
This is from the Daily News yesterday. He said, "Pryor reached for anything that would make white America uncomfortable and would prop up a smug belief among black Americans that they were always more cool and more ready to face life than members of the majority culture." I would argue exactly the opposite. I think Richard Pryor made black America profoundly uncomfortable. Stanley himself is a prime example of that.
He might have made everybody. That's exactly right. He might have made everybody uncomfortable. But see, what I thought was interesting is that he also says that vulgarity is material, and the idea as a real black person was a foul-mouthed type was his greatest influence. It was the result of seeing the breaking of white convention as a form of authentic definition. Now, that's some intellectual mumbo-jumbo there, but I think the breaking of white convention as a form of authentic definition, what the hell is wrong with that? Isn't that somewhat what the black militants movement, from the very beginning on some level was seeking to do? And is there a problem with that? I don't think so.
Well, Stanley has a problem with
okay,
it.
But
he's an American. He's got a right. But I'm not sure that in this instance, his feelings about Richard Pryor in any way, shape, or form represent the majority of black thought.
And also, I think that what pisses him off is that Richard Pryor does not take into any sort of comedic discussion the elements of class within the black community, which is, I think, why he defends Bill Cosby in this piece as reinventing the sitcom, because I never got a sense that there was, a class situation in Pryor's comedy, whereas in Cosby, you definitely feel that he is hiding a lot. He's deferring to his class.
But see, here's the interesting thing about that.
Yeah.
What seems to be implied in this piece, I mean, Stanley didn't say it, but the implication that I get from this piece is that class distinction is one that is only manifest. In other words, quote, lower class black people are only made manifest by vulgarity and pimps, et cetera, et cetera. And anybody who's black understands that is nothing could be further from the truth. And the idea that vulgarity is the exclusive province of poor black people is absolutely absurd.
It's got to be crazy. And it's weird because we were talking on the phone yesterday, Riley, about that what he really did, what Pryor really did, that there were some characterizations, despite vulgarity, that were so poignant and so precise and so comedically illuminating that they almost make you cry. And it's not a misrepresentation of black characters who are, you know, subject to poverty and they're, you know, vulgar people. It's a real, it really shows the heart of that humanity of people in that situation.
Well, see, and the other thing is, I really think that Stanley misses the mark in that what I got from Richard Pryor's comedy, particularly some of the almost sketch comedy that he did during the course of his life, was that, look, I am you. I am an American. I'm black, but I am an American, and this is what America, at least in part, is all about. And, you know, you have to deal with that fact.
Amen. You know, Riley, it's not always easy being a liberal. We all stray.
Oh, I thought we did that at the end of this.
We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now, it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, Brother Riley, as you know, this is my last week on the air until I hear otherwise, and I think I've been a pretty good sport so far, but my mind's been festering. I've been trying to keep it to myself, because I know the thoughts I've been having are wrong.
Go, my son.
Really? All right. Well, when I leave Air America, I want to see all of Air America go down the toilet, Riley. I want to see your show tank. I want to see Rachel's show crap out. I want my absence to have such a profound negative effect that the network's overall ratings will drop off the chart. Look, Riley, I feel bad about these thoughts, but I'm not done. When the network is about to go under, I'd like Danny Goldberg to personally call me and apologize for making a colossal mistake and ask me to come back to mornings, to which I will say, only if you agree to move to Los Angeles and get a job on a fishing boat where you'll have to listen to me as you're entering nets full of tuna on the deck in the middle of the night. Wow, so you see, Ryan, I feel bad for a lot of reasons.
Well, you want your penance?
Yeah, okay.
Well, you can start by apologizing to me, punk. You want my show to tank after all we've been through?
All right, no, I don't. Of course I don't. That's why I'm sharing this with you. You're right, Brother Riley. I apologize. I'm sorry. I wish you nothing but success.
And what about Rachel Maddow, pal?
All right, again, you're right. I mean, I like Rachel, and I'm sorry. Rachel, if you're listening, good luck with your show.
Maybe you should apologize to all the great people that work here that have nothing to do with what's going on.
All right. Sorry, everyone, for having bad thoughts that might include you because of your connection to Air America.
And as for Danny Goldberg, he might be giving you the opportunity of your life.
What do you mean?
The rest of your penance is to go create a new show and quit complaining already. Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Wow, that was deep. Thank you, Brother Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. We'll see you in the booth momentarily. 14 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow, yes. Yes, I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah, drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Nineteen past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
This morning's sedition, the last of four, my friends, keeping it chipper. You know, the spin doctors, that guy's going to hate us. That guy who said, what did he threaten to do if we played the spin doctors until we found out that Future Mark said that they run the world eventually, that they are the biggest band ever?
Uh-oh.
He promised to never listen to the show again if we played them again.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That's horrible. That means he's going to turn the radio off for the next 3 days. Riley, how about that? We got the highest ratings we have ever gotten since Morning Sedition started last month, folks. The highest ratings ever. Oh, man. Boy. And I'm leaving. All right, here we go. But that was pretty good, apparently, at 1:05 in the morning in New York City, my friends. Hey, Rocco in Rosendale, New York, what's your confession? How have you sinned?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you guys? Oh,
good, man.
All right, man.
Please, I have to confess. Mark, I've been using your material ever since day zero at work.
Oh my God! So you're, and how you doing with it? You getting laughs?
Well, you know, most of these people are conservative, so I'm getting like frowns and snickers, an occasional laugh.
Well, what does that say about my material?
they're all conservative. They wouldn't like your material anyway.
Well, I got to be honest. I think that I'm not sure that this is a sin per se, because I think we put it out there to do it specifically so you can go up against conservatives.
Right.
And I think that your penance is to, I think what you have to do is, hopefully I'll be out of here, but you have to actually pull one of them over to our side somehow with using the material. Can you do that?
Yeah, I think I could do that, but I have to work on my delivery, I think.
Well, that's the other part of your penance. You have to go to open mic night and start doing your own material.
Uh-oh.
All right?
Thanks a lot. Let
me know how that goes for you.
Will do.
Okay,
all right,
buddy.
Bye.
It's so funny. I get a lot of emails from comics. For some reason, comics always write me, because I am the barometer of the guy that, you know, like, but never made it big, but in some ways they respect my tone or my the way I deliver. And they always write me, you know, sort of like, you know, what happens if I, you know, don't do well the first time? And it's amazing how people think about comedy and how many guys I've tried to help out. I always write back to comics, always, because I knew that when I was starting out, what a painful, lonely thing that was. John in Buffalo, what's your sin?
Hey, John.
It's Sean.
Hey, Sean. Oh, sorry. Sorry, buddy. what's your sin?
I feel really horrible, man. I used to love listening to Michael Savage's show, and I would never listen to the majority.
Oh, my God. That's like the opposite thing.
Wow.
If you look at the polar opposite of the Majority Report, it's Michael Savage.
Well, yeah, well, you know, he tells these stories, and he'll read from, like, classic literature, like,
Yeah. Hey, no, I understand. I understand. But, you know, he also thinks gay people should die of AIDS. But I think, honestly, Sean...
No, there was a turning point that when I started liking the show, and it was last year in February when you were on, except for now I hate Sam Cedar.
You hate Sam Cedar?
Yeah, he called me Sean Hannity.
Wow. Okay. Well, here's what I think. What you have to do is try to get through to Michael Savage's show, and please tell him to accept his homosexuality, because his lack of acceptance of it is hurting everybody.
True.
That
all
that's
this.
My penance?
Well, yeah, that's your penance, but you have to get through.
Oh, that's a great penance.
And also, you know, give Sam a break. Are you a conservative?
No, not at all.
Oh, so he just calls you up. Well, then you know what? Call Sam Cedar and tell him Mark Maron told you to tell him that he's a jerk. All right.
No problem. That's an even better one.
All right. I'm glad I helped you out. Have a good time, Sean.
Take care, Sean.
Bye. I'm going to go on Cedar's show on Thursday. Thursday night, I'll be on the Majority.
You're going to call him a jerk there, too?
No, you know me and Sam do that thing.
Okay.
I love Sam. He's been very supportive. Oh, look, we have a confession from Jenna, who's still at the physical therapy facility in Minnesota. Jenna, do you have a sin?
Yeah, well, you see, it's really unfortunate, but from the beginning, I had this secret crush on Lawton Smalls.
Wow, real.
And that was hard for me because I'm you know, I'm an Orthodox Jew and he's a born again Christian.
What is this crush like? What does it include? What do you picture?
Well, I wait to you hear him, and I hope that every day is going to be a day that he's going to call in. And then I laugh, and I always download it and play it over and over.
Oh, my goodness.
But then you told him 2 weeks ago he found out he was Jewish.
Oh, well, let's get to the bottom of this. I got a treat for you. Jenna, I think we have Lawton Smalls on the line. Lawton, are you there?
Hello, everyone. Hi, Jenna. How are you?
Lawton, I've been wanting to get together with you for so long.
Well, honey, you know, I got a lot of fans. You know, I go to malls and things, and people send me letters and undergarments and what have you. Well, your situation's not rare, okay? And I never said that about being Jewish 2 weeks ago. That's a fabrication. That's something you heard in your head.
Oh, this is awkward because he's...
I'm sorry, but... I'm really sorry, Jenna.
I mean, Lawton, here you are. You know, this woman calls you up. You're being cold. You're being that celebrity guy that everybody hates. She has a crush on you, and you're acting like a total jerk.
Mark, I have to insulate myself somehow. I have to have a little Lawton time. I don't give it all away.
Lawton, I gotta have some left. Lawton, I happen to know in my heart that you are a lonely man. You sit in Planet Bush by yourself. You cannot communicate with other people at all. You have no friends. And all you do is you just sit there complaining about how I'm so lonely. And here you got a girl, a woman calling you, an Orthodox Jew, no less, trying to shower you with a love, and you can't even handle it, and you want nothing more than to receive that love, you dirty little man.
Okay, Mark, thanks. Can I talk to Jenna for a second?
Yes.
Jenna?
Well, Lawton, I was going to help you learn how to be a better Jew.
Jenna, can I ask you one question?
Maybe.
It's real quick, okay? Do you actually like me?
Is this private? But
No. No, it'll be fine, honey. Do you actually enjoy my work? Do you like me?
With all my heart.
I just need a little acceptance from somebody somewhere. Aww. I never get it from Aaron ever. The guy just is withholding it and hates me. You're my only friend, Jenna.
You're his only friend.
Tiny Tim's last wife was from Minnesota.
can I come to Minnesota sometime and visit you?
Oh, please. You can come for Hanukkah.
I'll come for Hanukkah. I'll do it for you. All right.
We'll try and work this out with you guys. This was. I feel like I've just made a love connection.
Wow.
I'm Chuck Woolery.
Mazel tov.
Oh, mazel tov. All right, Jenna, you feel better?
I feel better. Mark, you're going to go to heaven.
Uh-oh.
Thank you.
Because when you make a match, you go to heaven.
Well, thanks, Jenna. Feel better. We got to take a break. Well, I feel this has been a very warm confession. We got Robert
fuzzy.
Rice. Yeah, Robert Rice is coming up, people. Please stick around. We got Eric Bogosian. Man, there's a happiness in the air here. I don't know how to explain it, and it's a sad time, but yet it's a joyful time. 27 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Now, another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Mark.
What?
The information in these files will enable the government to ruthlessly study and select our children for sleazy exploitation faster than a micro camera hidden in one of Michael Jackson's llamas. Soon, heartless recruiters will be roaming our neighborhoods like salesmen, searching for victims, and armed with so much sensitive personal information, it'll make the Scientologists look like Amway.
Recruiters? Door-to-door recruiters?
That's right, Mark. Ever meet a fellow by the name of Rumsfeld?
What's the fella's line?
Never worries about his line. Or doggone thing. He's just a bang beat, bell ringing, big haul, great go, neck or nothing, rip roaring every time a bullseye salesman. That's Secretary Rumsfeld. He's an army man.
He's a what?
And he sells war to the kids in town with the big brass bombs and the rat-a-tat guns and the piccolo with uniforms too, with the shiny gold braid on the coat with a big red stripe running down.
But he doesn't know the territory.
Or doggone thing. He's just a bang beat, bell ringing, big haul, great go, neck or nothing, rip roaring every time a bullseye salesman. That's Secretary Rumsfeld. He's an army man.
He doesn't know the territory.
You can bicker, bicker, bicker. You can talk. Bicker. You can talk all you wanna.
All right, Mort, I'm through with this now.
Look, what do you talk? What do you talk? You can talk. You can bicker. You can talk.
Mort, shut up. Shut up. Just shut up already.
Mark, Rummy's failed attempt at running a war doesn't give him the right to decimate the next generation of bad poets and philosophy majors. Any more than your failed career in musical theater gives you the right to yell at me for being a sensitive artist. Remember that the next time Marky Jr. comes back from the home ec class and tells you you hate his freedom. And that's today's dispatch from the War on Brains.
Wow. That was very good.
Yeah, did yourself today.
Shipoopy. The girl who's hard to get. I haven't slept.
It's something like, you haven't slept? What were you up doing?
Writing this crap. Searching all over the internet for the Music Man. What do you think I'm doing?
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
All right, speaking about great moments, we're going to have the final War on Brains with Mort Milvington in just a few minutes. But right now, the economy of the United States is strong, and we're going to work together to keep it stronger. So said President Bush last week. Is that so, my friends? What's the outlook for 2006? Our next guest was Labor Secretary under President Clinton. He's now a professor of public policy at Goldman School of Public Policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Robert Reich joins us on the phone from Boston. Good morning, Secretary. How are you?
Well, good morning, Mark, and good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Secretary. How are you doing?
It's been a long time.
I'm doing great. I hear all of this rosy scenario talk by the Bush administration about the economy, and I don't know what economy they're talking about. This has been the most anemic, weakest economic recovery we've had in 45 years.
What are these? Now, tell me what. Now, when he says, what did he say? Like 325,000 new jobs? What's he talking about when
he says that? He's literally telling the truth. I mean, but of course, you've got to look around and say, well, what is he leaving out? And what he's leaving out is that that 225,000 new jobs last month came on top of a very, very weak job growth in the months before. And well, just compare this to the Clinton administration, which had an average monthly job growth for 8 years of 250,000 new jobs a month. I mean, this entire administration, and I'm not going to blame the president entirely, because there have been a lot of things that have happened over the last 5 years that made difficult for the economy to function. But jobs have been rare. A lot of people have very lousy jobs. The median wage, the wage of the worker smack in the middle, has actually declined, adjusted for inflation. I mean, if you consider the cost of health care and the cost of energy and the cost of everything else, people have less money today than they had at the start of this administration.
Now, Secretary Rice, you know, I always get around to asking you this when we talk. I mean, I read your piece in Newsweek, which I think is a must-read for everybody, because you really make it clear just how the schism between rich and poor is widening, and yet the way you present it, I still don't understand what we need to start moving towards as a country in terms of.
You don't understand what my writing, Mark? How can you say that? I write it in pellucid phrases.
No, it's beautifully written.
Clear.
It is. It was absolutely clear. But what? I have a lot of listeners out there, Secretary, who, you know, they hear the president and they look at their own life and there's nothing changing. Things are still difficult. They're still working three jobs. They can't afford gas. And what do we say to those people in this holiday season to make them feel like there's hope economically?
Well, we say to them several things. Number one, the nation is growing, and we've never had, as a country, this much productivity. The problem, and it is a problem, is that most of the benefits of this wonderful economy are going to the people at the very top. And so what we need, I'm going to say something now that no politician says, but I'm going to say it clearly, and I'm going to say it as clearly as I possibly can, and that is, we need what used to be called a progressive income tax, a graduated income tax. That is, roll back all of the Bush tax cuts for the rich, don't give any more tax cuts to the rich, get rid of corporate welfare, all of that, those benefits, those subsidies going to fat cat corporations, get rid of the pork like last summer's highway bill, and you have enough money for people to go to good schools, have good colleges, have health care, have all the things average people need to be more productive, and therefore get better for themselves and their children, better jobs.
Mr. Secretary, as long as we're talking about taxes.
Wait, Mark, was that pretty clear?
It's very clear, and I appreciate you clearing it up for me, but I'm still nervous about what you captured in your piece about how these networks and how these upper echelon colleges, you know, fortify the workforce and never let anybody else in. That's still an issue.
Well, it is still an issue, but again, you know, one of the big problems we have as a country is that so many people are struggling, and so many people, and you have a tiny, tiny group at the top that are raking in almost all the money. I mean, you have the top 1% owns 40% of all the wealth in this country right now. The top 1% has as much wealth as the bottom 90% put together. And you know, I'm not a class warrior, but this is crazy.
Yeah.
We haven't had this since the days of the robber barons in the Gilded Age of the late 19th century. We do have enough money for good education, good job training, good health care, good opportunities for people. The problem is not the global economy. The problem is not outsourcing. The problem isn't technology. People can make it in America, but they need to have the right resources. They need to have the right foundation.
Secretary Wright, a two-part question. One, I know that there were the president had a panel of people that recommended changes in the tax structure, and it seemed as though what they were recommending would hurt, quote, blue state people, the hardest people in the most heavily taxed states. For example, getting rid of a mortgage interest deduction, getting rid of certain state deductions, that sort of thing. And then could you speak also briefly about the alternative minimum tax and Congress's efforts to fix that?
Yeah. First of all, look at tax reform is not going to happen. Let's be very, very clear about this. There's not going to be any major change in the tax code. And by the way, when Bush and company say tax reform, what they really mean is that the poor and middle class pay more and the rich pay less. Right now, you've got a couple of bills going through Congress that are just small extenders of some of the Bush tax cuts for the rich. And also, in the Senate, you've got a bill that would reduce what's called, and you said it, the alternative minimum tax. And this tax was passed in 1969 as a way of making sure that very, very super rich people did not avoid paying any income taxes because they used so many deductions and tax credits. But the problem is that that original 1969 alternative minimum tax was not adjusted for inflation. It was not indexed. So over the years, as more and more middle class people, at least in terms of the numbers on their paycheck, did better and better. They don't really do better because obviously inflation is eating away at their paychecks, but as the numbers on their paycheck, it looks like they're doing better, they begin to be hit by the alternative minimum tax. And this year, for tax year 2005, you've got about 3.5 million people who are earning upper middle class wages between $75,000 and $100,000. They are going to get hit by this, which means that they can't take a lot of deductions. They've got to pay more.
Wow. Look, Secretary Reich, we're by the way, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Robert Reich. We have a call who has a question. Debbie, what's your question for the
Secretary? Yes, I'd like to ask if anybody has bothered to do a study of how many of these new jobs that were created are the second jobs and the third jobs that people are taking to support their families.
Thanks,
Debbie,
for you.
A lot of them are second and third jobs, and they're lousy jobs. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we are losing good middle-class jobs, and we are creating a lot of retail, restaurant, hotel, hospital, surface transportation, child care, elder care. Now, they're important jobs. I'm not saying they're not important. They're very important. Child care and elder care are very important. A lot of health care jobs are very important, but they pay lousy wages by and large, and we're creating a lot of them. So you are right. Many of these jobs are second jobs and third jobs for the same person.
Well, I think that we got a little bit of hope. Basically, it means that what you're saying, all in all, is we need to get rid of this entire administration, start with fresh people, and reassess how we're spending our money as a country.
Well, at the very least, at the very least, do that. But also, look, Democrats have to have the courage of their convictions and say, roll back all of these Bush tax cuts for the rich, get rid of the corporate welfare, get rid of the pork. In fact, increase property taxes and wealth taxes a little, 0.1% on everybody's income who earns over $1 million a year.
What about Social Security reform? Is that going to come up again?
No, it's dead.
It's over.
Absolutely dead. Dead and over.
Right.
The public is not stupid. They saw that that was basically a payoff to Wall Street.
They're not stupid forever.
No, they were stupid, unfortunately. And I don't want
last
to
say
American public. They were nobody's stupid, but the Bush administration
misled.
Everybody's eyes.
Exactly.
We know
they
that.
Are
that's why they're reelected.
Yes, they're easily misled sometimes when they're frightened.
Well, they were made to feel very frightened.
That's right.
And they were easily misled.
That's right.
And but the good news is, and I don't want to appear partisan at all, and I'm
no.
not partisan
no,
about
I know.
This, but we have another at least a midterm election next
yeah.
November, and it may be possible to get at least one House of Congress back.
That'd be great if
that
happens.
That's not a partisan comment, though. That was a fact.
Thank you, Secretary Reich. Great talking
Thanks
to you.
Thanks a lot, Secretary.
Mark, take care. Mark, take care of yourself.
Take
okay,
care.
Bye-bye. Robert Reich, haven't talked to him in a while. It's always great. I feel energized when I talk to him. I see Don Pushman has just showed up in the room. Don Pushman, son of Lewis and Linda Pushman of New Jersey, is we got the War on Brains coming up, the final episode. So buckle in. 45 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is former Labor Secretary Robert Reich. Remember me? I helped preside over the greatest economic expansion in our nation's history, creating over 20 million new jobs during Clinton years. I'm sorry to hear that the Bush administration has either outsourced or eliminated your job entirely. But while you're waiting for things to turn around, stay tuned to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Give me back my job again.
Mm-hmm.
50 past. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Wow, the gang is all here for sure. In its full form. I actually, Dan Pashman, I actually called Jonathan Larson. I didn't call my email Jonathan Larson. Buried the hatchet. He might call up.
That's pretty freaky, man. How'd that go?
All right, we'll talk about it later. It's great talking to you. Thanks for getting on. I'll tell you in a second. Can I do the thing? Every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the five-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with Morning Sedition's last dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Washington. No, not that northwestern state where it's always raining, but our nation's capital where it's always raining on our dreams.
Yes.
The War on Brains continues, you Panglossian jackanapes, especially for those of us who refuse to leave this country due to patriotism, love of liberty, and those nagging 20-year-old felony convictions. Hey, you're not drunk or nude when you're in your own front yard, all right?
That's right.
And I was nowhere near the sidewalk, you dumb cops. If you want to put a bell on my mic, bike, maybe you ought to put the handlebars out of your ass first. Take handlebars out of your ass first.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But you know what, Mark?
What?
That's all water under the bridge now. Air America friends and associates, because the curtain is about to fall. It's the end of an era. It's time to wake up because the dream is over. No, I'm not talking about this 3 hours of poorly researched whining punctuated by terrifying bouts of Dan Pashman laughter. No, I'm talking about the Supreme Court's latest decision to approve docking people's Social Security benefits when they can't pay their student loans. That's right. While you've been spending your college loan money on online gambling, bad sex, and Harry Potter, our president figured out a way to turn your already bleak retirement years into an experience worse than being Barbara Bush's Naugahyde porch rocker during a heat wave.
Oh, yeah.
His Xanadu. Yes, long ago in the memory-shrouded decade called the 90s, did Kublai Khan decree a preemptive vendetta against Iraq be constructed so bloated, so faulty, that even some Republicans eventually had to give up on it. The cost? No man can say. In the process, countless more efficient and proven defense technologies were abandoned, scrapped, like education. Shameful. Ignominious. There was a time when college was a means to self-enlightenment, self-awareness, Mark.
Yeah.
To expand one's understanding of their fellow beings. Does the government really expect me to make a living at what I majored in? I mean, how many jobs are there for crime-fighting gynecologists?
Right.
And you, Mark, in today's job market, you really think you could ever find a well-paying position as, quote, an irritable male prostitute?
No.
No, of course not. This country benefits more from funding wasted education than it does paying for things like illegal wars, corporate welfare, and industrial-strength Naugahyde porch chairs. And here's the proof. There's Chris Lopresto.
Free gum.
And Mark Riley.
Hi, I'm Mark Riley.
And Mark Maron.
Man, I have so many funny stories about my cats. Who wants a hug? Come on, who wants to hug me? You're not getting away that easy, damn it. Who wants to hug me?
And Brendan McDonald.
Hey, I just went into that restroom and saw the toilet paper dispenser into submission. You should have seen me. What are you looking at, you bastards?
And of course, Dave.
Dude, you got me pot? Sometimes I think my hair's like tentacles reaching out into space and touching stars. You know what I mean.
And there you have it. Free gum. Hi, I'm Mark Riley. Who wants to hug me? I saw the toilet paper dispenser. And dude, you got any pot? Mark Maron was a man who got everything he wanted and then lost it. Maybe fire truck was something he couldn't get or lost. I don't think any one phrase can explain a show's life. No, I guess fire truck is just a piece in a jigsaw puzzle. A missing piece. We'd better get along. We'll miss the train.
Yeah, and throw that junk away, too.
Dudes, but where's the pot?
And the curtain.
Excellent.
Where's the syllabus to that one?
That was great. There's many references. That was a very touching last bit there that I almost ruined with my laughter. Were you moved right in that gym? Did you feel a little tug at your heart?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, there's so many memories, Mark. Where do I begin?
I don't know, at the beginning.
What happened? Who ordered the veal cutlet? What time is it?
you'll be nostalgic soon. You, Mr. Self-Righteous, Mr. I Deserve Things. You.
By the way, where's
What's
the
going
deal?
On? What happened?
Any news?
Yeah, hopefully today. You know how it goes with these things. I don't know what's happening. Yeah, supposedly we're going to do a show, you and I, in Los Angeles. I know we're both going to be there, for God's sake.
So yeah, I hope so.
The very least we can do is meet once a week for dinner or something, right, with the girls?
Why not? unless mine leaves me for lack of income.
You think she will?
Well, sure. Why not?
What's she doing?
She's, she has dreams to pursue.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's important that somebody make money.
All right. Somebody has dreams.
My wife's pursuing her dreams as well, doing a lot of the performing. So tell me about this thing that you packed your stuff up in.
It's called the pod.
Yeah, and I saw a commercial for it. Did you pack it up? Is it sitting
No, what they do is they come with the pod, and they... In New York, they'll pack it up for you.
So you got it in your living room, or what the hell? Where did they put it?
No, they park it out on the street.
Out of the street,
So your stuff is sitting on the street in a pod?
Yeah. No, and then as soon as it's packed...
No, he's living in a pod.
They come pick it up. No tips or anything.
So you and Heather are in the pod waiting to go?
Right, with our heroin.
All right. We'll be back with Eric Bogosian. Thanks, Jim. Thank you, Dave. Little Goliath, always nice to have you in the theatrical presentation.
My pleasure.
Good job.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, 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 blah. All right, it's 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Morning.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you? Dan Pashman in the booth. Brendan P.W. McDonald in the booth. Chris Kalo with Lopresto up on the board. Everyone's here. Boy genius John Crimmings, Little Goliath Dave. We got Kent Jones in the house, Jim Rowe in the house. All the guys are here. Jonathan Larson, I emailed, which was very nice of me because I was an ass to him, and there was a little bit of bad blood, but I think that's water under the bridge. Mark Riley, of course, my partner and friend here, as usual, for the fourth to the last show.
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, look, I'll be honest with you. We got Angus McFarker in the wings. We got Eric Bogosian coming on. And right now, what I'd like to do is, we did something on this show that you don't hear much on radio anymore, which is we had live musical guests in the studio. And we had some great ones. We had some repeat performances. Mike Doty was on a lot. It was a very special thing about this show, and I always enjoyed it. So this clip starts out with Michael Penn, and then you'll hear Mike Doty, the John Butler Trio, and E from the Eels. That's, he's also known as Mark Oliver Everett, and that's a great record. But here's a little montage for your Morning Sedition musical guests.
Now that we're alone, trouble baby doesn't always come in threes. I had a hunch the fight was thrown, but what's it gonna take to get me to my knees? It's a bad sign when I'm just marking time. Sign, hoping we'll be fine. A bad sign when I think this way. It's a bad sign. I don't value you in love. But when the wind sat down and followed for an impulse.
circles, walk around in circles, walk around in circles, walk around in. Don't need to walk around in circles, walk around in circles, walk around in circles, walk around in. And I don't care what fashion is styling on your head. I don't care about the colors, the clothes you do wear. Only one thing that you should not forget. You gotta treat your mama with respect. Treat your mama with respect. You better treat your mama with respect. Slap you upside down the head. You don't treat your mama with respect. Treat your mama with respect. You better treat your mama with respect. Slap you upside down the head. You don't treat your mama. Watching the movie, the world's gonna end, and there ain't no place for a boy and his friend to go.
That was Michael Penn, Mike Doty, the John Butler Trio, and Mark Oliver Everett, E from the Eels, who I think he has a very haunting way of putting chords together. Other musical performances on our show, Ted Leo, Steve Earle, Dar Williams, David Gray, Stephen Page of Bare Naked Ladies, Jeff Daniels, Annette O'Toole, and Michael McKean, Bob Mould, and Langhorne Swim. Thank you guys for coming on our shows and playing some songs. That's a very little menu of stuff.
Is.
Jeff Daniels, right. We had him on to sing songs, and then we didn't talk to him about the squid and the whale. Isn't that interesting how that works? You know who else was on? You know what? Remind me. I want you to give me a copy of that interview I did with Jerry Stahl so I can give it to him. Because I just said, Jerry Stahl, the writer of Permanent Midnight, and a very, very, very funny cat, he wrote the liner notes for my new CD. Remember that CD I did? Like, when was it? Last May? Well, it might come out, folks. And if you have not signed up for my email dispatches, you know, once I'm out of here, markmaron.com, go get on my email list and I'll let you know when that comes out. But right now, you know, normally our Morning Sedition foreign correspondent, Angus McFarker, reports on stories from wherever there are violent demonstrations in the world. Today, however, we have him on the phone, but he won't tell us where he is. So what is that about? What's on your mind there, Angus?
Make that ex-Morning Sedition foreign correspondent, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
This show's going down the crapper, so I've decided to bugger off. Don't mean to sound ungrateful, but this job hasn't amounted to a trouser load of butt biscuits.
Really? Well, I thought you enjoyed going where the hostilities are.
I do. I wanted to go to Australia for the riots down there. The thunder down under.
Yeah.
Oh, but Air America wouldn't pay me airfare. Cheap wanker!
Yeah.
And anyway, since the Paris riots, I haven't been able to get in a real good scuffle. I require maximum violence, Mark. You know, a real bloody peace fest.
Yes, yes, I know. That must be pretty tough on you, Angus.
Well, luckily, Mark,
yeah.
I found something where my natural tendencies can freely express themselves.
Oh, yeah? Well, what do you... Where?
I can't tell you, Mark.
Uh-huh.
Huge secret, innit?
Uh-huh.
If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
All right. Well, that's... yeah, all right. Well, that's great, then. Well, goodbye, Angus. Maybe we'll see you again someday, okay? Be careful, all right?
Goodbye, Mark.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone says. In my book, you are the dog's bollocks. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, lads, listen up. The first rule of Fight Club, you do not talk about Fight Club.
All right.
The second rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
So that's what
third rule. Mm. Enough rules, you bunch of wee Nancy boys. Come on, let's get into it.
All right.
Okay, now, who wants to come over here and kick Angus in the balls?
Oh.
No.
All right.
Wow.
Okay. Well, I'm glad
glad he found something for him to do. You know, with Angus, that's not an easy job to fill. You know, Susan Sarandon's going to be on the show tomorrow.
Yes.
I imagine with some reflections on the death penalty after Tukey Williams was executed at 12:35 Pacific time this morning on this day by lethal injection. Schwarzenegger did not obviously give him clemency, and the reason was he said, "quote without an apology and atonement for these senseless and brutal killings, there can be no redemption." End quote. Now isn't that interesting, Riley? On some level, that. You know, Tukey Williams claimed to be innocent all the way through, has never admitted guilt in his killings. That, you know, according to Schwarzenegger, that it, maybe if he was contrite or took responsibility, there might have been a better chance. And I doubt that, don't you?
I think he was just blowing smoke.
I do, too.
I don't think there's any way in the world Arnold Schwarzenegger, if he wanted to have any kind of future in politics, would have spared Tukey Williams' life.
Yeah, I think you're right. So, hey, before I go away for a second, we bring Eric Bogosian out there. Pashman, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Harry. Hey, thanks for that mac and cheese. I'm glad there's a little left in there. That stuff's great, man.
Yeah, I figured out a way to make it. I actually had you in mind when I made it, because I put more of that stuff on top, the buttered breadcrumbs.
I actually was telling Jim Earle that I think that just by eating handfuls of those buttered breadcrumbs, you could probably live longer.
Well, I'm not sure what the logic is on that, but I do know that...
Well, even if I die sooner, I'll die happy.
So I'm going to see your parents this weekend? Is that going to...
Oh, yeah, they'll be at the party.
Okay, great. All right, well, look, we're going to have Eric Bogosian out here in just a second, so stick around. It's 15 past the hour, Morning Sedition.
This is Cindy Sheehan. Whether I'm waking up in Crawford, Texas, Washington, D.C., or Vacaville, California, I wake up with Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 20 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
You.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Thanks for tuning in. This is the fourth to the last show. About 40 minutes shy of the end of the fourth to the last show. I forgot to talk about something. I'm going to introduce our guest, but I want to put this out there for you people. Maybe you can help me out in emails. Maybe even give me a call. My wife wants me to buy her a gun, Riley. And I know this is a weird thing to bring up. I'm about to bring Eric.
And you're about to live together, right?
I'm just moving back. Well, maybe you can help me out with it, Eric. Our next guest is the Obie-winning playwright and actor, best known for talk radio and Suburbia. He's also the author of Wasted Beauty, which released earlier this year. It's a novel. To help us through this last week of Morning Sedition, we're joined by one of our favorite guests, Eric Bogosian. How are you, man?
Yeah. How you doing, Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah. When in doubt, knock him out.
That's there right, sir. But wait, I don't know about you. You're married. I know that, and you're married, right? So I haven't lived with my wife for a year and a half, and now she's been like, she wants me to get her a Glock for Christmas.
Oh, not just any gun. Yeah. A Glock.
Well, she went shopping for guns, and I'm a little uncomfortable with it because she's being all cute about it. She's sort of like, well, what, I don't know. I was looking at guns. I just thought this would be fun to have, and I'm like, this is a gun. This isn't a toy. It's going to be in the house, and you might shoot me with it. Now, if you were, you don't own a gun, right?
I wouldn't own a gun if you paid.
All right, Eric?
I do own a gun.
And do you feel better for it? Do you ever think about it?
It scares me having a gun around. I don't have it here in the city, but
I thought you were going to say I don't have it on me today. You got out.
There's
in the
something about a gun that is, it's all potential.
Yeah,
you know, every one of those bullets is waiting to be shot at some point or another.
Not just waiting anxiously.
No, when I say I have a gun, I have a .22. Out in New
in
Jersey, where the idea being that at one point there were varmints, and the varmint, it seemed like
not the bears.
No, not the bears.
That's not a varmint.
No, woodchucks eating my garden.
A bear's a very large varmint.
And it seemed like the most humane thing to do was rather than trap or poison or all these things to get these woodchucks, that you just pop them.
I like Frontier Bogosian.
Yeah, yeah. But I got to say, I lost my taste for it pretty quickly, and I moved over to the live trap thing, and you trap, you put a piece of broccoli in one of these cages, and they get stuck in it, and you take them off to some field where the farmer comes running out with a pitchfork. Oh. You try and release the woodchuck into his field. Uh-huh. Not here, get out of here. Yeah, right? Go take them someplace else. So I have all these woodchucks living out in the woods near me where they don't want
to
be.
So now you can go to Bogosian's Woodchuck Farm in New Jersey
But yeah. I guess it's probably because you're going to be around the house all the time now that she wants the gun.
She wants protection.
That way she can keep you in line.
Yeah, but you know how that, exactly. Or, you know, there's that whole thing of, waking up in the middle of the night and hearing the noise and getting the gun and then,
it's insane. Yeah, I'm leaning
against it. Yeah, I agree.
Plus, it's sitting around the house all the time and then you get in a bad mood about anything.
Or else you get into one of those weird moments where you're like, let's just play Russian roulette. Let's just do it. This is the only way to end this argument.
Officer Mark looked like a burglar. He looked like a burglar. I thought he forgot his key, but he looked like a burglar.
He was attacking me. Well, I'm sorry I brought you into this, Eric. It's just been festering with me. 866-303-227. Maybe we'll talk about it a little later about having a gun in the house or not having a gun in the house. So what the hell have you been doing lately? You look well. You always look well. You take care of yourself.
Yes. Good I shaved you. This morning.
You did?
Well, you didn't.
I didn't. Well, I'm doing this thing, with the show going off, and I'm going out to California. I figure I'd do this mountain man thing for a little while. I'm just
Howard
letting it
Hughes,
go.
Kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah. I'm going to head for the desert. I'm going to do that. I'm going to buy a motorcycle, head for the desert, and leave a fake will. And hopefully somebody will pick me up, and I'll say I'm going to give them $50 billion. I think that guy might have been telling the truth. So what have you been doing lately?
Well, I got the book out last spring, Wasted Beauty, and now I'm back to writing plays and getting ready to gear up to write another book. The book thing is, I guess, where I'm going these days.
Well, what's a writing thing look like to you? Because I know it's like you do churn out a lot of material, and you're a very prolific guy with plays and books. How do you structure your day for our creative people out there? Because I need to know, because I'm going back to having a day that needs structuring, and I don't want to just sit around and go, maybe if I make a cake, which I do. I tend to cook opposed to...
honestly, yeah. I don't know how I get anything done because I don't do anything all day long. I do things like this. I come up here. This will just kill my whole day because I got up too early to do this. I don't know. I get up and I read the paper. I drink a cup of coffee. I meditate. I do some yoga. Uh-huh. I sharpen the punch.
Yeah, yeah.
Somehow I make it through the day.
But where does the book get written?
I get some crystal meth about once a month, and I get that all done. It takes about 2 or 3 days, the clock.
Did you just do what did I see you in? Right? I saw you in that Peter Reigart film. Is that how you pronounce his last name?
Reigart.
We had him on the show. You played a rabbi.
Yes, kind of a Rabbi edgy. Fink.
And it was called King of the Corner. You're kind of an edgy rabbi, right? I'm trying to remember exactly. That was a very funny role. And you did something with Glenn Close recently?
Yeah, I was in Heights with her. Probably the thing I did most recently that was the biggest thing was doing this movie Wonderland with Val Kilmer, which was a couple years ago.
No, I saw that movie. That's an insane
kind of rough
movie.
Yeah, pretty rough and insane, but it's kind of stuck with me. I'm still trying to shake Eddie Nash? After Eddie Nash, yeah.
Yeah, you possessed.
The Nash.
That was a demonic
You're
movie.
You're my brother.
It's scary. Yeah.
Everything belonged to you, belonged to me.
Oh, yeah.
Your girlfriend. And all that, everything in the pipe.
Oh, very scary movie. So, like, when you work with somebody, like, I know you've done Woody Allen movies. You played an Orthodox Jew in a Woody Allen movie. Which
yes,
one was that?
I am a film. I'm not a Jew, but I play one on TV. That's basically my role.
You look kind of Jewish.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something. We are talking about what I look like. My wife is Australian, and I'm afraid to go back to Australia. I mean, given that I'm Armenian ancestry, they're down there.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Flocking the Lebanese down there today. Yeah. I'm thinking, ooh.
Yeah, I'll tell you
what I look like.
I got what you look like. I just saw talk radio again. It was on. I picked it up in the middle.
Yeah, once a week is gets me a little on? Much, Mark. But
what the talk radio thing?
Yeah,
I saw your movie on.
Yes,
it's on like all the time in the middle of the night. So I watched it, and there was a scary part in it. There's many scary parts, but I got a letter from. You were in the movie that you were being there was anti-Semitic letter, but I got a letter from a Jew accusing me of being anti-Semitic that gave me the creeps. I'll read it
to
you.
And you're surprised?
Yeah, well, I'll read it to you and to the rest of the world in just a second. We're with Eric Bogosian. We'll be back in a second. 27 past Air America Radio.
You're listening listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Hey, what is this? Wait, Larson's telling me we've got someone who's claiming to be John Bolton on the phone. Is that possible?
No.
Now, you know John Bolton. Tell him to hold on for a second. It can't possibly be the real. All right, but let's take the call. John Bolton. Now, Powell's starting to, you know, behind his back, say this guy's bad news.
I think he's going down.
Oh, that would be sweet. Well, let's take this call and treat it,
with the respect it deserves?
Well, it could be him.
Okay. Yes, this is John Bolton.
Yeah.
I don't usually call into radio programs like this, but I happen to be listening to your show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I felt compelled to defend myself in a calm and rational manner.
Well, I think you've got a lot to explain. I mean, besides saying that the UN shouldn't exist, there are lots of allegations about your temper and the shoddy way you treat subordinates.
I think you're trading in unsubstantiated allegations that represent an attempt to destroy my character and maintain the status quo at the United Nations.
Right. But these stories also seem to match up, man. I mean, you apparently berated a State Department analyst for a CIA report about Chinese weapons. Another State Department official called you a kick-down, kiss-up sort of guy. Several people allege that you tried to fire them because they didn't agree with you.
I believe I've been misunderstood and misinterpreted and mischaracterized.
Look, dude, an aid worker says you chased her down a hall and threw things at her. She says you were pounding on her door and kept sliding threatening letters underneath it. I mean, from all accounts, you have a real mean streak, man.
Listen, you stupid motherfucker. Whoa. You keep talking to me like this, I will fucking break you.
Hey, hear me?
I'll stick my fucking fist into your heart and pull your nuts out from the inside. You will not disrespect Bolton. Bolton will own you.
Oh, man.
What was he channeling Sam Kinison or something?
But he's definitely not the right guy.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Oh, man. P.W. McDonald doing the Bolton thing. 36 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. Hey. It's Morning Sedition. We're with Eric Bogosian. Looks like, can I just take this real quick? Jared, you want to tell me what I should do about this gun thing real quick? Is this Jared in Chicago? Hey, how are you, buddy?
Hey, Jared.
Hey, guys.
What's up, man?
I miss you enormously. I'll spare the whole sob story. I'm just saying, Maron, you cannot allow a gun in your house. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Because I watched Left of the Dial. Yeah. I wanted to shoot you. There was a scene, Riley, where Maron was having one of his early freakouts on a regular basis, and I was just looking at you, Riley, and just thinking, you need to reenact that scene from Airplane where the woman starts freaking out and someone starts yelling, "Get a hold of yourself, man!"
Yeah.
If there's anything that you should buy, is maybe a taser, because maybe you benefit from some shock therapy.
A taser. So keep it in house. All right. Well, thanks for listening for so long, Jared, and being such a good fan.
Thanks, Jared. Wow, that's deep.
22 times more likely to kill someone in your house if you have a gun in it. Well, there you go. I think I've made my decision, fellas, and thanks for helping me out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I am not going to...
That's what we're here
have
for.
Have you done the research on the Brady Law yet?
I don't want one. You know, I thought it was stupid. I'm going to be home. You know, I'll take care of the business. You know, if she was home by herself, it would be different. So, Eric, I was telling you about this letter. So I do this thing on the show. It was a casual conversation about Hanukkah and Christmas, and I get this letter. Mark Maron, horrified at your anti-Semitic rant yesterday morning. If all that Judaism means to you are latkes and dreidels, then you have a lot to learn. I suggest that you shut your, quote, Jew mouth, unquote, until you do, if you have issues with your mother, talk to a psychiatrist. I wasn't surprised that the Southern minister approved of you. You furthered his plans for destroying us one way or another. Happy to know that you have been fired and you are leaving. Sorry to know that you will carry the disease with you. How do you like that?
The disease.
The disease of being an anti-Semitic Jew and I'm going to be dispersed. Basically, she's wishing that I was dead. This is the kind of email that comes from a Jewish person to another Jewish person. How do you like that?
The hard thing about religion is that it causes so many problems, but any of us who were brought up religious, deep down inside, we really, you can never erase the feeling that if you say anything against organized religion, that it, you're doing something bad, you're being a bad person.
Were you brought up religious?
Oh, yeah, I was an altar boy. Armenians are the ancient Christian, the oldest Christians in the world. And so I grew up in a, what people call it, Orthodox type of Christian church. But, yeah, the church services were like 3 hours Sunday morning. You're Armenian, too? I didn't know that.
No. I went to an Episcopal church, and when I was growing up, the services, maybe they only seemed 3 hours long. But that was like, you know, sermons and communions and who could get and who couldn't, you know, the whole nine.
Wow, I was brought up with so little respect. And I don't know if it was respect. I was bar mitzvah. I went to Hebrew school. But I never felt connected to the religion in a threatening way. I never felt like I was pressured or made to feel guilty or had any real sort of conception of God. I just didn't get it.
Well, deep down, I just know that no matter what I say rationally and understand, for instance, how contradictory the Bible is and how it doesn't really make any sense at the end of the day, that deep down, you know, you're saying something against God and God is watching you. And yet at the end, rationally, I can't believe that God is up there in a throne watching me, you
know. But they put the program in your head.
Watching internet porn and, you know.
There's Eric again.
Hello,
Seven.
Hell.
You should be working, Eric.
And yet there's this ineffable thing that we know is in feels kind of spiritual. Maybe you don't have that either. I mean, some people say Freud denied that. Freud said that there was no, even the notion of spirituality was baloney.
No, I get it. And did you ever read that book, that Ernest Becker book, why am I forgetting the name of my favorite book now? Ernest Becker,
Get the gun.
Get the gun. it's a riff on Freud. He says that the need to believe might be innate, that it's transference, that in order to feel. I get that. And I question that.
I mean, you know, there it is. It feels right.
Denial of Death. That's the name of my favorite book. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, right. Yeah, sure. I was reading that this morning on my way over here in the subway. I keep all those books in my house.
I have a different experience with religion because so many people when I was growing up, remember that most of the black people that were involved in the civil rights movement were clergy people. Martin King and all these different folks. So you had a kind of different view of what religion could accomplish under those circumstances because everybody knew the Martin Kings and the Jesse Jacksons, all the rest of these folks were putting their lives on the line.
Right.
Yes, and that question has been asked recently, like, where is the clergy today?
Yeah.
They're being bought out by faith-based initiatives.
Regarding
money.
The horrific things that are going on, you just take your pick of what you want to talk about, but where is the clergy? Why aren't they stepping up?
They're gunning for government money because that's the new solution to dealing with the situation with people who have no money is to do this faith-based initiative thing and get the churches involved so they don't want to piss off the government.
Yeah, and
it's schizoid. I find it completely schizoid.
The notion that there's
a new religious movement, that there's these new churches and new age churches, and everybody's trying to be good, and yet they can't. They never bring it to bear on anything practical or real in our lives, whether it's education or whether it's
behaving like a real Christian,
or capital punishment, or any of the things that, you know, if you were really whatever Christian means, you're Christian.
Exactly.
Anyway.
No.
There are more progressive Christians out here than most people think.
That's true. And I get
they're on the DL. They're very quiet folks. But I belong to a church that's full of them. And I got to tell you, they're a lot more than people think.
And I'm one. I mean, I'll tell you, the teachings of Christ himself, what is said by the prophet Christ, the Jewish prophet Christ in the Bible, I'm down with all of that stuff. In fact, it's so radical that if you really try to live it and think and live like that, turn the other cheek and love thy neighbor, all of that is... It's so rad. It's very hard to even bring it into your life on a day-to-day basis.
I get a lot of flack from Christians who think I characterize them all in a negative light, which I don't. I have a real difficult time with the Christo-fascist zombie brigade, the right-wing politicizing Christians who don't behave in a Christian way. But liberalism, in and of itself, many of the principles of liberalism are, you know, if you were to behave in a truly Christian way, that is a very liberal disposition.
Can I just interrupt? You could say that about all the great world religions. You could say that about Islam. You can say that about Judaism. You can say it about Buddhism, that they all seem to have at their core this radical, fantastic attitude that gets changed into these other things over time.
Right, sure.
Into you know, nasty things, warlike things. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Mark. It's very important to say.
I have nothing important to say.
Talk about talk radio.
I'm not going to bring up Becker again. That's for sure. And get swagged by Mr. Bogosian over here. Oh, listen to the pseudo-intellectual smarty pants throwing big names around. You started it with the Freud thing.
So here's a segue for you.
All right.
So the Christian thing got really revved up for me last winter when I was working with Labyrinth Theater Company, who I want to mention this morning because I love these guys. So you ask me what I'm doing. I've been hanging out with this fantastic theater company.
And the play had something to do with Judas, right?
Yeah, The Last Days of Judas Iscariot. It was if Christ loves the least of us, then isn't Judas the absolute bottom level least? Well, according to the Bible and Catholic teaching, Judas is still in hell. So according to the play that Stephen Adler Gierges wrote, it's like, well, how come Jesus isn't forgiving Judas? How come Judas doesn't get forgiven out of hell and get to, you're furrowing your brow because
I'm listening,
it's
Eric.
Christian theology here. So that was the premise of the play, and it was this sort of vaudevillian court thing that goes on. Does it get resolved? Well,
go see the play.
Almost. It was a fantastic play, and I got to play Satan in it because I'm the star witness. I come in and get to talk about how Judas got pulled into this whole schmagegi.
Can you hum a few bars? Can you hum a few bars of Satan?
But it was Philip Seymour Hoffman. Here's our segue, who directed Judas.
I think we should just leave, Riley. It seems like Bogosian's taking over the show. He's playing
it's the coffee, man. It's the coffee. I get into a cup of coffee in the morning.
Yeah, but it's Philip Seymour Hoffman's theater group. When we're talking about him on the break as being a genius.
Yeah, because you had said during that ad a while ago, that's why I brought it up, you said the independent films is Philip Seymour Hoffman in all of them. And all I know is Capote is great.
And you think he's going to win the Oscar?
Well, I'm knocking on wood. I'm not going to say, I don't want to jinx anything. I think he's going to definitely get nominated. I don't see how he can't get nominated because I'll tell you, as an actor, when I watch what people are doing, sometimes I'm really amazed by what they do and I say, wow, that's great.
Right.
And sometimes I say, how did he do that?
Right.
You know, like who's that football running back guy that's just like some Reggie,
Reggie Bush.
Reggie Bush. Like, there's a picture of him in the paper the other day of him leaping over this guy.
Oh yeah, that was during that last game they played.
Yeah, and you want to go? How did he? At one point did he decide he's going to leap over? To make the touchdown. And the same thing with Phil and Capote. I don't understand how. I mean, he's doing such a complex thing as an actor. It's so entertaining, but it's also he's playing like three levels at the same time. It's fantastic.
It would seem to me that like with Reggie Bush, and also I think with Philip Seymour Hoffman, once you get into character, that it becomes almost reflexive. It's not the deciding is over. You're living it.
I know he had to make a decision of how was he going to portray a guy that was known to the public, but was known as a pretty. Very charactery character.
Sure.
Capote, he had that high voice and he had a whole way about him.
He didn't want to go over the top.
But he made a decision to go over the top and then at the same time show you this inner life of this guy, which is incredibly hard to do, to play what is apparently a caricature at the same time a guy who's very grounded. So without being, for those of anybody who's seen the movie knows that he's amazing in it. But
I gotta go see it now.
And he's the head, along with John Ortiz, of this Labyrinth Theater Group that I just got inducted into this past summer, and very exciting to be around. It's very hard in the art world, in the theater world, to stay raw and ragged and awkward and be willing to take big risks, and that's what these guys do, and it makes it very exciting.
And they work out of the public theater here in New York?
Currently, yeah.
Well, Eric, it's great seeing you. This will be the last time on this incarnation of this show, and you've been a great guest, and it has been great talking to you.
Thanks, Mark. Sir. Thanks for having me.
And good luck with
everything. Good luck in all
in
of
future.
Your desert gun battles.
Yes, the Zen Mark experiment, which is forthcoming. We'll be back to close things up for today. It's 48 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Edition.
This is Wayne Gilman, better known to the hard body mamas of the greater New York metropolitan area as Newsday. When I'm not busting a cap in some jive cat's ass for hogging the printer when I'm on deadline, I'm having a funky good time with Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Ooh,
Newsday.
Well, look who's awake. Ready for another taste of Wayne?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour with Wayne. This thing, it's Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley there.
Yeah.
It's a morning sedition on Air America Radio. A lot of interesting feedback. No, I mean, it's just kind of funny about this whole gun thing in terms of my wife wanting me to buy her a gun for Christmas. One guy, where is that guy's, where is that? One guy wrote back, two words, Phil Hartman. Oh, that's rough. But I still understand it. Anyway, here's another guy. Anyway, the gun thing, I try to be a liberal, but I tend to be more of a socialist of sorts, but I do own some rifles of the Russian sort. It is actually in a sick way quite fun. While I could never kill an animal, there are some folks I think I could off. Being responsible is the most important thing. Not a toy, more of a collector thing. Okay, fine. How about this one? Let's see what he says. If your wife wants a gun for home protection, get her a small shotgun. I have a 12-gauge with pistol grip. It's light and easy to use, and you can buy non-lethal loads for it. These loads have different things in them, like small bean bags, rubber balls. That makes it sound fun. It's fun when you shoot somebody.
Or those little pellets.
Oh, don't yell. It's just a rubber ball. Or rock salt, like Granny Clampett used to use on the Beverly Hillbillies.
Wait a minute. That's not in there.
It is.
It is.
I didn't make that up. Here we go. Several things on the gun. Why? One really has to examine their motives. Cool is not a good motive with weapons. If you get one, get proper training. There are many pros to train your bride, and you should too, how to properly handle a weapon, and the after the training practice. Once she starts buying all the ammo, the cost will kill the allure. Well, that's interesting, because this is what sort of got her into it in the first place, was a friend of hers brought her to a shooting range. And by the way, I got to correct something. 22 times a gun, right, Dan Pashman, is 22 times more likely to kill somebody you know if it is in your house.
Right, a gun kept in your house is 22 times more likely to kill someone you know than to kill an intruder in self-defense.
Okay, so that doesn't mean, it's not necessarily who's going to be with the gun.
It means that if you keep a gun in your house, that gun is way more likely to kill someone that you don't want it to kill.
So that doesn't put the onus on anybody. That could just be some dude that's at your house at a party going, dude, is this loaded?
Right.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. It makes your house a lot more dangerous.
Oh, come on, this is fake, isn't it? Oh, man.
Man, you know, I had a friend that used to live in Baltimore. I guess he still does live in Baltimore. And I went by his house one day, and we were just talking about a couple of things, and he opens up this cupboard. And there, you remember Black Talon bullets?
Yeah.
The ones that they outlawed? He had like a chest full of Black Talon bullets and a gun collection you would not believe. Scared the bejesus right out of me.
For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. A huge oily smoke cloud from a fire raging at a fuel depot north of London was spreading over France and heading for Spain. The large cloud drifted over most of northwestern France, causing the French military to immediately surrender and embrace fascism. Unfortunately, now people will get the impression that England is gray and dreary. An Iowa girl had to be hospitalized when she suffered a seizure after five continuous hours of playing a video game. The girl was playing a game called True Crime New York City and apparently went into a seizure when she reached the fifth level, renting a third floor rat-infested walk-up for $3,000 a month. Paris Hilton has been named the worst celebrity dog owner in an online poll. According to the website, Hilton has gone through one pet after another, a couple of dogs, a ferret, a goat, and a monkey. Hilton responded to her critics saying, quote, all my friends know the reason I have so many animals. I have to keep killing them and sacrificing them to Satan in order to keep my fame silly. There you go. Phrase of the day, just drop it into conversation. Bush is at it again, comparing the Iraqis to America's founding fathers. Wake up, sheeple. The only founding father George Bush can name is Sam Adams and Johnny Walker, which isn't even right.
Lord have mercy.
Tomorrow, we got Susan Sarandon.
Yeah.
We got the final Rapture Watch. We're going to have a look back on one of our most infamous moments. That would be the Wrestling the Republican moment.
Oh. Right? Ooh, that moment.
That fooled a lot of people.
Yeah, fooled a lot of people, including in this room. Have a good one, man. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.